here we are on the way back from ReasonCon, listening to our own podcast, because honestly, I've never actually listened to us before, which I need to do more.
I'm telling you, we're funny.
It kind of feels like one of those, the quarterback reviewing the game after the game.
I have to do it as the host, yeah.
So I think I should start doing that, but we are currently, as is hopefully on the recording, we have just finished the part where I am talking about wanting and hoping that atheists could find a better way to ask the question, so why do you still believe? Well, now that I have been to ReasonCon, which was an amazing experience, and had that question asked to me just a million times, and heard so many different presenters talking about just addressing the non-rational believers, it no longer bothers me. Now that I've seen that inside, and realized, and just gotten a better idea of what it is like to deal with just coming out as an atheist, and the really interesting thing was is that all these stories that I heard about coming out as an atheist was worse than coming out as a homosexual.
Yeah.
It was just an absolute nightmare for these people, and that's a fucking eye-opener for me. Because gays coming out get treated like absolute dog shit. So...
And we've seen that plenty with a lot of our friends.
Yeah. So now that I am... Now that I've had this experience with ReasonCon, I have a new statement to atheism. Keep doing what you're doing. Understand... Keep it in the back of your mind that question is prickly. And you may just have to power through it. But at the same time, all rational theists out there, again, the question is always going to be awkward, and no matter how good they think they're going to do, the atheist may ask it wrong, or in a way that is wrong to you. Power through it and just answer the fucking question, because the discussion that erupts afterwards is way more interesting and completely washes away any discomfort the initial question brings.
It's worth having. Discussion is always worth having.
It is worth the minor offense, the sensation that you are being called an idiot for about half a second until you actually start talking, and having this discussion on reason and ethics and all of this stuff, which is just good humanist discussion that everyone needs to be having, because we need to be talking about our morals and ethics and where they come from and where they're going. It's very important.
Would you say that the way they were asking, because they all asked essentially the same question, but they all asked it differently, do you think it was, like, genuine they wanted to know?
With maybe one exception. The one guy who was just kind of, he was just kind of a jerk, but...
He was just argumentative, wasn't he?
He was just being argumentative.
And he was drunk as all hell.
But he just has an argumentative personality, and I can certainly understand that, so I shouldn't be judging.
Precisely.
I should be the good Christian here and not judge.
There is that.
But I see, the thing was, this was the thing that got me, is that you say I've encountered bad atheists, and bad atheists always ask, so why do you still believe? And it sounds condescending. Mm-hmm. Well, this weekend, I met a whole bunch of good atheists, and they didn't ask me, why do I still believe, with that condescending tone. They asked me, what do you believe and why? And that question is not offensive. That is not insulting in any way, shape, or form. That is just asking to explain yourself. And no one should ever be offended when someone asks them to explain themselves. That's an invitation. That's an invitation to be understood. And don't we all want to be understood?
I should hope so.
I agree. We should all hope to be understood, because understanding breeds camaraderie and compassion.
It's one of the things that I think human nature always strives for. Yeah. We're always trying to be understood. We're not even necessarily looking for acceptance to a degree, but even if you don't have to accept something, as long as you understand it.
Yeah.
You know, and seeking that understanding, hopefully it does make it to another level, but we all want to be understood. I think that is definitely a universal and inhuman thought.
Yeah. It reminds me of that philosophical quotation, and I completely forget who said it, but the one of every man is an island. Because we are just alone in our heads.
Yeah.
And we can never be sure if we are understood. And if another person really can conceive of how we think. And we all feel slightly alone because of this. Because we have that ultimate disconnect. You can can never really know what's going on in another person's head. And it's lonely. And I understand that.
Yep.
And so this whole dialogue of, you know, why do you believe what you believe? And I realized that I asked a similar question of several people. Specifically the former Muslim presenter.
Oh, yeah.
Of asking her, you know, what was it? You know, obviously it's a long process deconverting from a religion. Incidentally, I didn't know that deconverting was the word for becoming atheist, and it makes perfect sense to me, and I love it. But that's a new word that I learned.
Well, it's a deconversion if you were ever on the theist side.
Yeah.
There are many that it just never took.
Yeah.
I don't consider that I myself was ever a theist. I never really believed.
So you never deconverted, you just were.
I just was.
Yeah. But anyway, I just think it's an interesting word, and it's very descriptive. But I asked her, obviously it's a long, complicated process, but usually there's a linchpin, and what was hers? And it's basically the same question. Why do you believe what you believe? Without asking that question with that many words. And
if Mary serves, you said, what was the straw that broke the camel's back? And then she quipped back, well, I hope it wasn't Muhammad's favorite camel.
Yeah. But it's just, and it's just, there are a million ways to ask this question, and only one of them, I was unfortunate that I only ever got the one that just sounds condescending as all hell.
Yeah.
And now I completely retract all previous statements, and as far as the atheist community goes, I love them all, and I think they're great people, and I find, and it's fantastic, I think it's hilarious and ironic that I have more in common with atheists than I do with quote-unquote good Christians.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just... It's both terrifying and just sad.
Can be. I noticed that, you know, while I was in that room full of secular humanist types, I felt very at ease with all of them.
Yeah.
Because I carry around a bit of equipment, you know, for recording and other purposes, which if you're listening to this, you're probably going to realize that there was an awful lot of content that's coming out of ReasonCon, and it's going to be trickling out in various ways over the next few weeks.
And this is all coming out of Andy's magic box stuff.
It's all coming out of my magic box. And I didn't have any compunction to leave. I didn't feel bad about leaving my stuff at my seat and going over to get a cup of coffee.
Just going across the room.
Yeah, just going across the room, but having my back turned on it.
Yeah.
I didn't have any worry that someone was going to come up and jack my stuff. It wasn't even a thought until I got back. It's like, oh, I didn't even worry about it. Huh. And, you know, I've been to places like MegaCon in Orlando for comics and, you know, all the geek culture there. And though those are still my people, you know, in that geek culture way...
You still keep one eye on your shit.
And a hand on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The trust did not extend there.
No. Not that much trust, anyway.
Yeah. And I find that that's interesting. So just kind of, that was the feel of the room. Very friendly. Very open. Like, everyone there was... Well, if you've been to church, it was your own congregation. And, you know, the people that you trust.
Yeah.
You know, if you dropped your wallet, they would simply hand it back to you. You know, that kind of thing.
It was that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was a really nice feeling to be among so many just genuinely nice, caring people.
It certainly was nice to walk into a room and completely ignoring the atheist part, because being the only theist in a room full of atheists was still a little weird. But walking into a room and listening to these people talk and realizing that all of these people hold science and reason to be paramount. And I love them all, because we believe the exact same thing.
In reason we trust.
In reason we trust. Bless science, hail Sagan.
It was a good time. It was an excellent time. We met a lot of wonderful people, a lot of great podcasters, several authors, and the speakers were just very approachable and fantastic. Don't believe anything that you've heard about the Scathing Atheist podcast. They're nice people, after all.
They are nice people, and they make a good point, and they make a good point, and it's in his book that I read, and also it was part of their presentation, that and part of their podcast that I listened to, the most recent episode, it's just a common theme that I'm guessing they bring it up with fair regularity, just to make
kind
maintain
of a reminder.
That stance.
Yeah.
You know, the reminder is that sometimes you just need to be an asshole and in people's faces, because otherwise they're not going to get the fucking message. And
right. You have to be that counterpoint on the fulcrum.
And that is true. There's another one that I was introduced to, which is Dogma Debate.
Yes, and David Smalley with Dogma Debate.
You know, just like anybody in any situation, some people like him, some people don't like him,
right,
for whatever reason. But he is the guy who treats it with as much respect as possible and goes to and invites religious people to debates and especially loves talking to the clergy and all of that, and just, you know, and just having a logical debate with them about beliefs and you know, pointing out the inconsistencies and making them think about this dogma they accept blindly.
Well, yeah, it is dogma debate, but really, it's less a debate and more the discussion.
Yeah.
And he went through it with a little bit on his talk, was that it's, if you're in a debate, one side is expecting to win.
Yeah.
In the discussion, you're both just talking it through. You will end up at some conclusion. Both of you will change somewhat from that discussion. You know, you may not end up changing your actual stance and your point of view, but you're not necessarily rooted to that location. In the discussion, you're willing to bend.
Yeah, it certainly shows flexibility and a willing to question what you hold to be true, which most atheists already do, because you have to hold everything to question. That's what science and reason tells us. And it's getting these hardline dogmatic people who've never thought that way in their life to think that way. And it's important. And so what I get out of both of these presentations is, and it's something that I agree with in other fields as well, is that the movement needs both. I always say this when regarding you know, pacifistic philosophies, is that, yes, I agree with pacifists that we should all be peaceful. Not all people are going to be peaceful, so we need warriors as well. The world would be great if we were all like you pacifists, and we need you pacifists to try to stop war, because war is awful. But when you don't work, we need the soldiers to step up and defend, because if you're an absolute pacifist and someone comes along who simply does not care and they're going to kill you anyway and take your stuff, well, then you're going to die away. So we need both. And it's the same thing is true of this atheist movement. You need both. You need the firebrands and you need the ambassadors.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Ambassadors.
Yes.
Yeah, David's talk was on basically being the wolf, not being a sheep.
Yeah.
Essentially, it was not being a sheep.
Yeah.
And many of the congregations and, you know, in the, in all the Abrahamic faiths use that analogy. And it's directly from the holy books.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
Right. It's like, okay, so he's a shepherd. What does that make
police
you?
Reported ahead.
That makes religious people, that makes congregations and flocks, sheep. And what do sheep do? They just follow the herd and don't think about it. And if that offends you, then maybe you should reconsider your position. If you don't like being thought of as a sheep, well, then that's telling about your belief system, isn't it?
I think it is.
And just even saying it that way that's not insulting. That's just pointing out facts. And if you take offense to that, that's not the fault of the person pointing it out.
Right.
You know? But yeah, his was a very interesting presentation as well, and examining that and
just not to plagiarize him too much, but just kind of sum up. He spoke in depth on basically, who are you trying to please?
Yeah.
So if you're trying to be nice in a conversation that could get heated, and you're letting someone be a bigot, or be insensitive to a society, to a culture that you are trying, that you are fundamentally trying to protect. Are you going to let them continue to be that way?
Yeah. If these people are speaking hate about a group of people that you are compassionate towards, why do you care what this hate spewer thinks of you? Why do you want to please them by not instigating the fight? No, you should stand up, because if you believe they are speaking hate and they are wrong, you should not want to please them. So don't simply stay silent for the sake of not starting a fight. Some fights are worth fighting.
Right. And it just comes down to, who are you trying to please?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, his real conclusion was, you really need to please yourself. If you've got your ideals, you need to stick with them.
Yeah.
And this was in relation to his own family at a holiday dinner.
Yeah.
You know, when one member of the family was, spouting some basic bigoted nonsense. And then he walked away, just kind of dropping that on the table as a nice stinky turd in the middle of the room.
And then walked off.
And then walked off.
Because he didn't want to be challenged.
Right. So, David, being the alpha and omega as he is, he chased after him, you know, and followed him into the kitchen and confronted him. And it was about to get a bit ugly. And I'm sure that... Oh, to be a fly on the wall during that whole thing. That would have been interesting.
Very interesting.
But really, then no one else in the room agreed with what the person had done.
And yet they all stayed silent.
And they attacked David for standing up for the belief.
But you really have to turn that right around on them, which David did, and said, if you don't agree, why are you defending this person?
Right.
You know? It's a great point. Great point. Because you said before, the only one you have to please is yourself. And there is another great philosophy quote, the source of which I am forgetting, where it says at the end of the day, the last man you have to live with is the one in the mirror.
Yeah.
You know, and that may not be the exact quote, but it's something like that. And it is important. And this idea has been around for a long time, and it applies to the situation, even if you think it doesn't.
Right. And in conclusion to his talk, to again just sum up, it was, you know, the wolf is not bothered by the opinions of the sheep.
Yes. So, and that was a very clever way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sometimes, yes, you have to be that lone wolf.
Yeah. And that was
and
one
it's
of
hard.
The, that was one of the greatest things about many of these talks is that just the wit. That you're not going to find in any pastoral sermon. At least 99% of the ones I've ever listened to, they're dry and they're boring.
Yeah.
And then you go and listen to an atheist talk about philosophy, and it's always clever. It's just, there's always clever. It's not necessarily witty, but it is clever. There's always going to be at least one thing in there that just makes you go, huh.
Like David Fitzgerald, for instance.
Yes.
Oh my.
Oh Lord, that man.
Oh,
new personal hero?
Yeah, he's a fantastic guy, and incredibly funny, full of energy.
Mm-hmm.
His talk was almost indescribable, but there was a bit of a skit.
There was a skit.
It was a dramatic reading, if you will, of certain passage.
certain racier section of the Bible.
It was accompanied by a bit of a porn groove in the background, and it was lovely.
It was fantastic. Yes, his section was difficult to describe, but it did involve sort of just unbelievable things that you actually find in the Bible. And I find that if you want similar things like this, I don't know if ReasonCon, the material is going to be available. I know some cons just kind of compact their stuff and you can find it. I don't know if ReasonCon
does it. I know that they were recording video.
Okay.
I don't know in what format that is going to be unveiled.
Okay.
It's a lot of video.
It's a lot of video.
So, and from multiple vantage points.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how long any of that editing is going to take. It's mostly a volunteer.
When DragonCon does it, it takes several months to get it out.
I don't think it's going to take that long,
Because it's not as big an event, but still.
Right, yeah, but also they want to get it up.
Yeah, they yeah. really, really want to get it up. Yeah. But so obviously you can look into all this, but if you like just the idea of finding things that you would never expect to see in the good book, Cracked.com also does articles like this. Just bizarre shit that's in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's great.
If anybody is a fan of comedy, just like stand-up comedy in general, you might have noticed that it's awfully irreverent.
Yeah.
An awful lot of comics have no real love for the Bible at all.
It's just...
I mean, sure, there's the Jeff Foxworthys and the Southern Comfort style of comic.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because they do have very funny jokes.
Right, and
very
they're hilarious.
Stories.
They're hilarious, yeah. But it's all about, you know, what's happening basically at home.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
That kind of comedy has its place. But
right.
When you just want to point out the absurdity of the world, you got to be ready for a little irreverence.
Yeah. As far as absurdity goes, religion is a great target.
It really is.
That and politics.
That. we don't even...
And since they're going so hand in hand lately...
Yeah.
We'll leave you to just listen to the rest of our show.
Yep. And this is where we'll pick it up on the show proper.
Yeah, I think so.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. That'll work.
That'll work.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Such craziness. I'm glad you had a good time.
I had a fantastic time.
You were challenged. You faced your challenge.
I was challenged. I explained myself. And I did notice, and this is something that Christians are terrible at, that when I planted my feet and said, you know, this is what I believe, and I'm not looking to question anymore. I'm done questioning. I did the questioning thing, and I came back to belief.
Mm-hmm.
And people just sort of backed off. They're just like, I don't get it, but okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And it certainly helped that I came back around to, you know, regardless of what my belief is, law has to be secular. Because of the whole, you know, forcing beliefs onto other people is wrong.
Right.
By my own dogma, because that's not a compassionate act. It worked, you know.
Yeah, the whole, you know, as long as you support equality for all.
Yeah.
Truth, justice, all that.
All that jazz.
Then you're cool.
Yeah.
They may think you're a little odd, but hey, you know.
This was a good trip, man. Thank you for bringing me along.
Absolutely.
I think we certainly got some material. I don't know how much of it's usable, but at least some of it is.
Yeah, it's going to be it'll be interesting to go through it and chop it up, because
yeah.
I got a bunch of like big long 4-hour sections and some even longer than that I'll need to parse.
But the bit that we can tack onto the show is right there at the end. So.
Yeah, yeah,
so
the last one there. So
yeah.
That'll be good.
That'll be easier to find.
Kind of a bookend.
Yeah. Bookend.
That's actually, I will. No, I'll come right up here because I also need to borrow your restroom.
Yeah.
It was an awful long drive.
And then you got to get home.
And this concludes our broadcast day.
It's in.